Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Proverbs chapter 29, which I will entitle Proverbs of Solomon, part 20. This is the last chapter of Solomon's Proverbs. And so after this chapter, we will bid him a pleasant goodbye and look at the last two chapters of the book of Proverbs, which were written by Agur and Lemuel, respectively. So we start now in verse 1. Proverbs 29, verse 1. A man who hardens his neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken beyond remedy. Now, anything that is stiff and unyielding will break instead of bending. Think of an ox who stiffens his neck. You can't get him to go where he wants to go. Or a horse. I had a horse who would stiffen his neck, and you couldn't get him to turn left or right if you gave him all the hay in Iowa. Think about a football team. The ball that's on its own 40-yard line, and it decides that it wants to prevent the offense from even gaining a yard or two, and so they stiffen up. The next thing you know, that offensive team has exploited holes in the defense because of its rigidity and marches on down the field and scores a touchdown. So sometimes you got to bend so you don't break. Well, a man who hardens his neck after much reproof needs to bend. He needs to say, you're right, I need to change my ways. Otherwise, bad things are going to happen. He's going to be broken. Here's another similar proverb, Proverbs 5, 11 through 13. And you groan at your final end when your flesh and your body are consumed, and you say, how I have hated instruction, and my heart spurned reproof. I have not listened to the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to my instructions. I wish I'd have known about this Proverbs when I give tests and people don't follow the directions and get points taken off. I could have quoted this to them. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 2. When the righteous increase, says Solomon, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, people groan. And I'm sure Solomon included himself in the category of the righteous. But I'm sure he's talking about righteous people in general in the government, not just him. When a wicked man rules, on the other hand, people groan. I'm groaning a lot. I groan a lot in American history. Here's some other scriptures that are similar. Proverbs 28, verse 12. When the righteous triumph, there is great glory. But when the wicked rise, men hide themselves. Now, these proverbs are applicable to those who think that politics doesn't matter. Government doesn't matter. Oh, yes, it does. I hate to tell you, it matters. Proverbs 28:28, when the wicked rise, men hide themselves, but when they perish, the righteous increase. I'm waiting for a few wicked people to perish here in the United States of Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't know if I'll live to see it, but when they do, the righteous will increase. If they don't perish, the righteous will decrease. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 3. A man who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but he who keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth. The he there is talking about a son who keeps company with prostitutes, and he wastes his wealth. I'm assuming the his there refers to the son, not to the father. Here's some other scriptures about sons affecting their father's emotional state. Proverbs 10:1, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. Not only the father is affected, but also the mother. Proverbs 23, verses 24 through 25, the father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who sires a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her rejoice who gave birth to you. Proverbs 23:15. My son, if your heart is wise, my own heart also will be glad. Now, this statement about the emotional state of fathers is not only applicable to human fathers, but also spiritual fathers. 1 Thessalonians 2:19 through 20, Paul says, for who is our hope or joy or crown of exaltation? Is it not even you, meaning the Thessalonians, in the presence of our Lord Jesus at his coming? For you are our glory and joy. 2 John 1:4, John says, I was very glad to find some of your children, he's writing to a church, to find some of your children walking in truth, just as we have received commandment to do from the Father. He's probably writing to a church. 3 John 1:4, John says, I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth. I've got a young Chinese convert. Well, I guess she's still young, in her high 20s maybe now. She's a former student, led her to the Lord. She came and visited with my wife and me for a while, and then I kept in contact with her when she was at college, which I helped her get into, and now I can't find her anymore. And I suspect it's because she had a non-Christian boyfriend and she backslid. I've tried and tried to contact her, and no, she ain't giving me a lot of joy. On the other hand, there's another classmate of hers that I led to the Lord, and she's married, got twins, raising the kids up as Christians, going to church, giving money to missionaries, what little money she has, praying all the time, and she gives me great joy. Proverbs 17:21, going back to natural fathers, he who sires a fool does so to his sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. Proverbs 17:25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. Proverbs 28:7, he who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. That proverb shows Solomon complaining about a son hanging around with gluttons, and this proverb, Proverbs 29:3, shows Solomon being upset with his sons hanging around with harlots. Gluttons and harlots, stay away from them, son. He wastes his money. Now, Proverbs 6:26, Solomon says, for on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread, and an adulteress hunts for the precious life. That's because men, instead of going out and being gainfully employed, are spending their money on trinkets and lingerie and presents for their sugar babies or their adulterous companions, and they end up being broke. We go down to Proverbs 29:4. The king gives stability to the land by justice, but a man who takes bribes overthrows it. The man who's taking bribes is, of course, referring to a king who takes bribes, but a king that does not take bribes, but rather provides justice. He gives stability to the land, and that is absolutely true. As an ex-lawyer, I'm telling you, if you don't have a decent legal system, you've got nothing. Here's another bribe proverb. Proverbs 28:21, to show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread, a man will transgress, and that means a man who's taking the bribe, and he will even take a little piece of bread for a bribe. Doesn't take much. It's not good. We go down to Proverbs 29:5. A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. For whose steps? The neighbor's steps, I think. Gil, Clark, and Jameson, Fawton, Brown. I thought perhaps he might be spreading a net for his own steps, but I don't think so. I think it's for his neighbor, because he's buttering him up, just like you butter up a turkey before you slice into it. You put him off guard. You seduce him to enterprises which are not good for your neighbor, etc., etc. We go down to Proverbs 29:6. By transgression, says Solomon, an evil man is ensnared, but the righteous sings and rejoices. A righteous man sings, John Gill says about that, he sings for joy in the view of electing, redeeming, and calling grace, and eternal life and happiness. He's, of course, heading out to the New Testament here. Solomon was writing in the Old Testament and did not know about all of this electing, redeeming, and calling grace. But Gill goes on, this man has peace of conscience now, fears no enemy nor any danger, and expects a life of glory in the world to come, and oftentimes sings on the brink of the grave in the view of death and eternity. On the other hand, the evil man is snared by his transgression, because the wages of sin is death. Proverbs 12:13 says, an evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble. That's a particular sin, the sins that come out of your mouth that ensnares the evil man. We go now to Proverbs 29:7. The righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor. The wicked does not understand such concern. Wicked people don't give a rip about the poor. This is referring to legal rights in court, rights of the poor. However, of course, as Proverbs and other scriptures are quite clear on, it's not only the legal rights of the poor that are important, but also their needs, financial needs. For example, Proverbs 28:27, he who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses. Think about that. He who gives to the poor will never want. Now again, all these proverbs are general statements. They're not absolute, ironclad, 100% in every case guarantees, but there's plenty of verses about giving to the poor. But we're going to go now to legal rights. Proverbs 29:14, if a king judges the poor with truth, his throne will be established forever. Give legal justice to the poor. That's very important. Psalm 72:4-12. This is a psalm by Solomon, one of the few psalms that Solomon wrote, so it's quite applicable here. Solomon says, may he vindicate the afflicted of the people. Now, who is the he? Well, the NIV heading says, the reign of the righteous king. So it is the righteous king who will vindicate the afflicted, and afflicted means poor, the afflicted of the people, save the children of the needy and crush the oppressor. Verse 12, for he, the righteous king, will deliver the needy when he cries for help, the afflicted also, and him who has no helper. And I assume that Solomon did that during his reign. We go to Proverbs 31, 8 through 9. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and needy. That was written by King Lemuel, who I don't think anybody knows who he is. I certainly don't. Isaiah says in Isaiah 1:17, learn to do good, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. Notice those are all legal contexts there in all these verses. We go down to Proverbs 29:8. Scorners set a city aflame, but wise men turn away anger. Scorners are setting the United States of Sodom and Gomorrah aflame right now. If we had more wise men, we would turn away the wrath of God from this God-condemned country. I say condemned. It's in the process of condemnation. It might not be condemned yet. Well, who are scorners? John Gill says, quote, such as despise dominion, speak evil of dignities, proud and haughty men that speak loftily and with the contempt of their superiors. I don't know. Gill acts like or thinks it is scorners of rulers that Solomon is talking about here. I tend to think it's scorners of God who set a city aflame. Wise men turn away anger, Gill says, by their wise counsels and advice. They appease tumults and seditions and restore things to a quiet and settled state. Just like years ago in the NBA, Dennis Rodman said something idiotic about people wouldn't say such nice things about Larry Bird if he was black. And I think, if I remember correctly, Isaiah Thomas, because he was the teammate of Rodman, tended to stick up for Rodman. I don't think he believed Rodman. And it was an absurd charge. Larry Bird settled the whole thing down, though, with wise advice. He appeased a tumult in the NBA. We go now to Proverbs 29, verse 9. Solomon says, when a wise man has a controversy with a foolish man, the foolish man either rages or laughs, and there is no rest. Laughs. That reminds me of a certain vice president that we have, that she cackles whenever somebody brings up something that she can't answer, which is about every 10 minutes. My notes say that this person who laughs at the wise man, he scorns and derides the one bringing arguments against him. He can't deal with the facts. He can't deal with logic. So he just says, racist, homophobe, I follow the science. I just saw a YouTube video last night where a woke leftist lesbian LGBT soccer player for the United States soccer team was complaining about FIFA, the governing body of worldwide soccer. They just now got around to having 3 female referees. And this aforesaid lesbian soccer player says, well, it's because of the sexism and racism of FIFA. And I thought, what does racism have to do with this? It's talking about gender. Race is totally irrelevant. It's because these people just spout. They just spout venom and call everybody racist, homophobe, Islamophobe. They just make up things and just spit it out at people they don't like. They're fools. You can't have a controversy with a fool like that, because the foolish man rages and laughs, or the foolish lesbian soccer player rages and laughs, and there's no rest. Proverbs 27:22 says, though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. You could pound that aforesaid soccer player in a mortar with a pestle, and her foolishness will still be there when you've beaten her to a pulp. Proverbs 29:10, Solomon says, men of bloodshed hate the blameless, but the upright are concerned for his life. The upright are concerned for the blameless life, for the man whose life is blameless. Other upright people are concerned about that. Standing by and being neutral is not an option when a blameless man is being destroyed. It just isn't. Men of bloodshed hate the blameless. One might think, well, why don't they just go out and commit their bloodshed and leave everybody else alone? Well, think about the LGBT, LSMFTQ minus plus equal advocates in this country today. Are they content to have their freedoms and their right to sodomy as a marriage? No, they've got to go shut down Christians who aren't in favor of that. They've got to take them to the Supreme Court. They've got to get the state human rights commissions on top of them to harass them and drive them out of business, despite the fact that these bakeries have done nothing to hurt these homosexuals who want to pretend that they're getting into a marriage with a wedding cake, because there's lots of other bakers that'll serve them, no problem. But no, they got to go harass the pizza restaurants. They are men of bloodshed, not actual bloodshed, but rhetorical bloodshed and legal bloodshed. Oh yeah, they're doing it. They hate the blameless. They hate people just trying to make a living. Christians. We go down to Proverbs 29:11. A fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. Here's what John Gill says about holding it back. The wise man reserves his mind and thoughts and designs to himself and does not discover them until a proper opportunity offers, when to disclose them is most to advantage, or he restrains his wrath and anger, defers showing it to a proper time when it may answer a better purpose and he may do it without sin. Ooh, that's wisdom. Let's look at some other scriptures. All of them Proverbs. Proverbs 12:16. A fool's anger is known at once, but a prudent man conceals dishonor. Proverbs 16:32. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 15:18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger calms a dispute. Proverbs 25:15. By forbearance, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Proverbs 14:29. He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. Proverbs 14:17. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. Proverbs 29:22. An angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. We get the idea. Keep your mouth shut when you get mad. When you get angry, bite your tongue till it bleeds. I can do that with people. I can even do that with woke leftists. Been around them all my life. Before they were woke, they were just leftists. But I've been teaching in academia for decades, and of course, everybody's a liberal, so they say dumb things, and so I just sit there and smile. But it's not the same with my computer. But the nice thing about getting angry at a computer is it doesn't scream at you back. Of course, it quits working. So if I'd quit yelling at the computer, it would probably fix itself a lot faster. We go now to Proverbs 29:12. If a ruler pays attention to falsehood, all his ministers become wicked. What falsehood? Well, that soothing flattery that advisors say to the king because they suck up to him because they want him to hear good news so they can get promoted and bask in his aura of power. And pretty soon, if the ruler listens to all that nonsense, all the rest of the ministers are going to start feeding him nonsense also because they see that the ruler's happy. There's a term for this. I forgot what it was, but the Bay of Pigs disaster back in the early 1960s when the newly elected John F. Kennedy had a problem, Fidel Castro and Cuba 90 miles off our coast. And so somebody, I forgot who, comes up with this idea of invading Cuba and getting rid of Cuba. Now, all the military men that were advising JFK and the CIA, they basically said, this is not a good idea. This cannot be carried out with a high percentage of probability that we're going to win. But, if I remember the story correctly, Bobby Kennedy, the Attorney General and brother of President Kennedy, said, no, we can do this. Well, once he said that it could be done, then the CIA people said, well, yeah, maybe it could be. And then the general started saying, yeah, I think we can pull this off. Saying what the king wanted to hear, and it was an absolute disaster. People got killed. The anti-communist people got killed because of this situation where the ministers flattered the king with words that he wanted to hear and flattered the attorney general with words that he wanted to hear. We go down to Proverbs 29:13. The poor man and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives light to the eyes of both. Now, what does this mean? The Lord gives light to the eyes of the poor man and to the oppressor. Well, it could be the light of natural reason. It could be the light of grace. The problem with that is it wouldn't be light given to the light of the oppressor. It'd only be given to the light of the poor man. And you would then have to assume that the poor man is also saved because most people call it salvation or the poor, as John Gill says. That's not going to fly, I don't think. It's talking about the Lord gives light of natural life. The Lord gives light to the poor man and to the oppressor, which means the poor man is just as valued as the oppressor is. Now, here are some other scriptures honoring the poor. I've already listed several when I was discussing verse 7. But now here at verse 13, I'll read you some more. Proverbs 22:2, the rich and the poor have a common bond, and the Lord is the maker of them all. Proverbs 14:31, he who oppresses the poor taunts his maker, but he who is gracious to the needy honors him, honors his maker. Proverbs 17:5, he who mocks the poor taunts his maker. He who rejoices at calamity will not go unpunished. 1 Samuel 2:8, this is Hannah speaking, Samuel's mama. God raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the garbage pile. He seats them with noblemen and gives them a throne of honor. Proverbs 22:22, do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate. We move now to Proverbs 29:14. If a king judges the poor with truth, his throne will be established forever. Now here's another verse honoring the poor. I've already discussed that at verse 7, so I'll skip this and just add it to our list of Proverbs where Solomon is showing his complete concern and compassion for the poor of his kingdom. We should share that same concern. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Oh, brother, is there nothing worse than a spoiled child? Nothing worse. An undisciplined child is a nightmare, but the rod and reproof give wisdom. The rod is corporal punishment. Reproof is verbal correction. Here's some other scriptures about discipline of kids. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Proverbs 13:24, he who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Proverbs 23:13, do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. In other words, it'll be painful, but it won't kill him. This is, of course, assuming reasonable corporal correction, not child abuse. Proverbs 19:18, discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death. Proverbs 3:12, for whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father corrects the son in whom he delights. Hebrews 12:5-6, this is talking about spiritual discipline now. The author of Hebrews says, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. Revelation 3:19, those whom I love, I reprove and discipline. Therefore be zealous and repent. Proverbs 29:17, correct your son, and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. Why, we must ask ourselves, are there so many scriptures about discipline? It's because people don't like to give discipline, and people don't like to receive discipline. Nobody likes it, because you're dealing with sin and rebellion. But you better do it if you want to be happy for the rest of your life. We go down to Proverbs 29:16. Solomon says, when the wicked increase, transgression increases, but the righteous will see their fall. Similar proverb is in verse 2 of this same chapter, chapter 29. When the righteous increase, the people rejoice, but when a wicked man rules, people groan. Now, it might seem like a truism, when the wicked increase, transgression increases. Well, obviously. But, as John Gill says, the verse probably means more than that. When the wicked increase, the common people are encouraged by the example set for them by their rulers. So it means when the wicked rulers increase, transgression increases by the hoi polloi who look at their leaders and say, well, if they're doing it, well, I'm going to do it too. And the verse ends up on a happy note, but the righteous will see their fall. The wicked people and those who increase because of wickedness, they're going to fall because ultimately evil will be judged. There is no hope in this life if we do not believe that evil will be judged at some point. Some of it is going to be judged on the other side, but it all will be judged. We move now to Proverbs 29:17. Solomon says, correct your son and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. Well, I've already mentioned that proverb when I was giving you at verse 15 a list of all the scriptures that deal with discipline, or at least a lot of the scriptures that deal with discipline, so I won't deal with that again. We move down to Proverbs 29:18. Where there is no vision, the people are unrestrained, but happy is he who keeps the law. Now, what does this mean? There is no vision. The Vulgate says there is no prophecy. The NIV says where there is no revelation. Now, this is obviously talking about prophecy here. It doesn't mean a far-sighted plan for an enterprise like a corporation's vision statement. How many times have you heard Christians say, well, there's no vision, the people perish, as the King James says. The people are unrestrained. Usually don't quote the NASB translation. And that verse is bent to mean that we've got to have some leadership in this place. Talking about churches. And so it means, well, we don't have a strong visionary pastor. We're going to die. One more example of how the scriptures are perverted for the uses of evil men or stupid men. Maybe not evil. Maybe that's too strong a word. It means you need prophetic revelation, which is interesting because Solomon apparently believed in prophecy. He believed in direct spiritual revelation from God, unlike cessationists today who say that that is automatically a no-no because they're basically crypto-rationalists who only begrudgingly admit that there's such a thing as a miracle in the 21st century. Now, I would go even further to say that this vision is a supernatural revelation of what the law is, because the last part of the proverb says, but happy is he who keeps the law. Another reason why I think this vision is of the law, because when you don't have it, the people are unrestrained. And so that sounds like no vision, no law, no restraint. John Gill says of these unrestrained people who don't have a vision and who don't have the law, they are refractory, fierce, obstinate, ungovernable. We go now to Proverbs 29, verse 19. A slave will not be instructed by words alone, for though he understands, there will be no response. Now, this assumes that this is a surly and intractable slave who just stands there. He understands what his master wants him to do, and he just looks at him. The slave just looks at the master with a blank look, and he doesn't answer. Well, you got a situation like that. Blows need to be added to the words to make the slave or the employee, if we want to apply it to modern day life. So if you have a boss and you just look at him when he asks you to do something, he'll drag you into human resources and write you up, put it in a file, and finally he'll boot you out of the organization. How many corporations do we know or organizations where everybody in the department knows what needs to be done, but nobody will do it? They know what they're supposed to do, but they say, now we don't like this. So they just don't do it. Going back to the slave who will not be instructed by words alone, but it needs to have blows to get him to work, this shows that free labor is much more productive than slave labor. A free laborer works in his self-interest. He doesn't need somebody to instruct him or to whip him or to give him a blow to get him to work, because he knows he's working for himself. And if he works well, he makes more money, and so he's happier. But a slave is working for someone else, namely the master, so what incentive does he have to be productive or efficient? There was a 19th century liberal economist whose name I cannot remember. I read it so long ago, but he came over from Europe, and he went to North Carolina, I think, and studied the American slave system back during the times of slavery, and he made that point. He said, this is not going to work. This slave labor is totally inefficient. And that's what's really so sad. If the war hadn't broken out, slavery was dying in the South. As the land, soil, and fertility got burnt up, the only soil that was left that would grow cotton using slave labor was out in the Mississippi Valley, Louisiana, Mississippi, and so the land was burnt out in Virginia and South Carolina on the coast, and so those slaves were being sold down the river, and that's where we get that expression, please don't sell me down the river. They were sold down the river to the rich lands out west. Those lands would eventually burn out. Slave labor is just not productive. Free labor is. Now I realize that that little economic analysis could be controversial because everything about slavery is controversial, but that's my humble opinion. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 20. Solomon says, do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Now we've already read about biting your tongue till it bleeds. I read you a bunch of scriptures, which I won't read again, but here's another scripture by Solomon written in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 2. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. For God is in heaven and you are on the earth, and therefore let your words be few. That sounds like something that could be written to Job. Be careful what you say to God when you get upset. Now, God will listen, and he will forgive, but still, you know, he's God. You're on the earth. He's God. Maybe you better acknowledge that he has more sense than you do, more knowledge than you do, and he might have a reason for this bad thing that's happened to you that he's not delivering you from yet. We go now to Proverbs 29, verse 21. He who pampers his slave from childhood will in the end find him to be a son. Now, we have a pretty bad translation problem here because we have two alternate translations that have exactly the opposite meaning. This is the NASB. He who pampers his slave from childhood will in the end find him to be a son. The NIV says he will bring grief in the end, the slave who's pampered from childhood. The NIV margin says the meaning of the Hebrew for this word is uncertain. So the son can be a surly, spoiled, rotten son, or he could be a beloved son. We don't know. So let me give you some other translations. Here's the Holman Christian Study Bible. A slave pampered from his youth will become arrogant later on. So the idea is you better not pamper your slave. You better discipline or he'll become arrogant. Proverbs 29:21 in the KJV, he that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become his son at the length. So there the son is a good son, not a bad son. Proverbs 29 in the New American Bible, if a man pampers his servant from childhood, he will turn out to be stubborn. So the NAB thinks the son is a bad son. Here's the American Standard Version, Proverbs 29:21. He that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become a son at the last. So the ASV thinks the son is a good son when he gets pampered. Proverbs 29:21. This is the Bible in basic English. If a servant is gently cared for from his early years, he will become a cause of sorrow in the end. So the Bible in basic English thinks the son is a bad son. Proverbs 29:21 in the Darby translation, he that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall in the end have him as a son. So Darby thinks it's a good son who's pampered when he was a slave or a servant. Proverbs 29:21 in the God's Word translation, pamper a slave from childhood and later he will be ungrateful. So there you have it, 50-50. I report, you decide. I tend to like the NASB and the other translations who say the son will result from being a pampered slave. Pampered is sort of a strong word. Delicately bringeth him up. The NAB has pampered also. The God's Word has pampered. So I guess the word means pampered. It means he's really treated nicely. It's just a happier conclusion. You treat the slave nicely from the time he's a child and he will become part of the family. He'll be like a son. But I can't prove it. I'll report it. You decide it. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 22. An angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. Now, I've already read you a ton of verses about hot-tempered men at verse 11. So we will pass on that proverb and go now to Proverbs 29, 23. A man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor. Just like Adam, he was proud. He wanted to know good and evil like God did. And he ended up being fallen and degraded. His pride went before his fall. Here's some other scriptures about the value of humility. Matthew 23:12. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. That's a great verse. That's Jesus speaking. Luke 14:11. Jesus says, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. That's the same verse. It's either a parallel passage, or it's the same teaching that Jesus repeated in two different times. Luke 18, verse 14, Jesus says, I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. Again, that's a parallel, probably. That's the story of the proud Pharisee who was bragging to God that he wasn't like that nasty tax collector. Proverbs 16:18. Solomon says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before stumbling. Pride goes before fall. Proverbs 18:12, before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, but humility goes before honor. Proverbs 15:33, before honor comes humility. Proverbs 11:12, when pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble is wisdom. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that should solidify our belief in the common English proverb, pride goes before fall. Easier stated, harder to be humble. Reminds me of that old country song by Mac Davis. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I love that irony. The irony is what makes it funny because most people aren't humble. Most people think they are perfect in every way. Somebody thinks that he or she is perfect in every way and enters into a marriage will make his or her spouse miserable. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 24. He who is a partner with a thief hates his own life. He hears the oath but tells nothing. The reason a partner with a thief hates his own life because the law is going to catch the thief and going to catch him too, most probably, hopefully. Then when he's caught, he hears the oath but tells nothing. He hears the oath means being put under the oath, as the NIV has it. And what is the oath? Swear that you will tell us the truth where you hid the booty. Or swear under oath who you killed and where you killed them. And of course that would be an oath sworn before a magistrate. Leviticus 5:1 says, Now if a person sins after he hears a public adjuration to testify when he is a witness, whether he has seen or otherwise known, if he does not tell it, then he will bear his guilt. So if you are asked by a legal official to swear about some point of law or some fact involving a law case and you don't say anything, then you are guilty. You will bear your guilt, says the law in Leviticus 5:1. Go down to Proverbs 29, verse 25. The fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. Here's an example of how the fear of man brought a snare. How about Peter? He was scared to death. He would get caught as he's standing in the courtyard outside the high priest's house in the nighttime before Jesus was finally condemned by the Sanhedrin. And somebody said, Hey, weren't you with him? Peter says, No, I wasn't with him. I didn't know. I don't know this man. I don't know Jesus. And when the cock crowed the last time and Peter cried like a baby, he was afraid of what the Romans or the Jews were going to do to him. He was afraid of what the Jewish officials were going to do to him. And as a result, he denied Christ, which was a horrible thing for him. Jesus had to rehabilitate him later up there after the resurrection when they were at the Sea of Galilee. It was a terrible thing that Peter did because he was afraid. How many times do we do a lot of things when we are afraid? The opposite of fearing man is trusting in the Lord. If you trust in the Lord, then you won't fear man. Okay, you're going to kill me, but I trust in the Lord that he's going to rise. Okay, you're going to kill me, but I trust in the Lord that he's going to raise me up and I'm going to live with him eternally. Well, then that sort of takes the fear away. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 26. Many seek the ruler's favor, but justice for man comes from the Lord. Couple of options. What kind of favor could you seek from a ruler? Well, you could ask the ruler to screen you from deserved punishment, to prohibit the law from punishing you for something illegal that you had done. Well, even if you get such a pardon from an earthly ruler, justice for man comes from the Lord. In other words, you're not innocent in the eyes of God, even though you're innocent in the eyes of the human law, and God's going to punish you eventually. He's going to give you justice. That's one way of looking at it. The other way is that many will seek a ruler's favor to screen the person from unjust punishment. Let's say he has been convicted unjustly in a court, and so he goes to the ruler and says, please overturn this. And of course, oftentimes, you don't get justice here on earth. The ruler does not favor you, which goes to show that there's no such thing as perfect human justice. However, there is perfect justice for man, which comes from the Lord. I'm not really sure how to interpret that proverb, whether it's favor for unjust actions that the person seeking the favor has done, or whether it's favor that the person seeking favor requires because the system has screwed him. But either way, the only way you're going to get perfect justice in this life is from God himself. That doesn't mean we do away with court systems. Of course, we cannot have anarchy, but sometimes they make mistakes. We go down to Proverbs 29, verse 27. An unjust man is abominable to the righteous, and he who is upright in the way is abominable to the wicked. In other words, righteous people and wicked people hate each other. As John Gill says, there always has been a mutual enmity between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. The seed of the serpent being people whose father's the devil, people in the world system who hate God. And the seed of the woman, of course, is Jesus and his seed. Believers, there's always going to be a conflict. We're never going to have peace on earth until evil is completely taken away. One reason there's constant conflict between the righteous and the wicked is that the righteous man's whole life, as John Gill says, his whole life in conversation carries in it a tacit reproof, conviction, and condemnation of him. That's why evil people cannot stand it when Christians say that homosexual sex is sodomy. They can't stand it because that means that they're being convicted. And so they get mad and start talking about how tolerant they are as they shut down Christian bakeries and pizza restaurants. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished with Solomon's Proverbs here at the end of Proverbs chapter 29. That prepares us to go to our next chapter of Proverbs, which we will entitle The Words of Agur. That's A-G-U-R. Hope to see you for this change of pace in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.